Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room. And we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Before we get started, folks, a bit of a special announcement here for everyone at Wrestle Chat Radio. And that is that we will be doing a very special program next week. And stay tuned to our Facebook group for the exact time. And if this program is successful and everyone likes it, we'll be doing a series of these, and these are crimes related to the world of professional wrestling. And the first one we are starting with is a very unique and a very, very bizarre incident involving two teenage boys named Kevin Ives and Don Henry, better known as the Boys on the Tracks, whose bodies were found on an Arkansas railroad track, apparently killed by a passing train when they were in a drug-induced state of sleep. The coroner's report subsequently found that the boys were murdered. One was stabbed and the other had blunt force trauma to his head prior to the train hitting them. This remained a mystery for over 30 years. 35 plus years until former WWF professional wrestler Billy Jack Haynes made what many people are calling an outrageous claim that not only did he know who murdered those two boys, that he was there on the scene. That he was the muscle, even when he was in WWF, he was the muscle for a gigantic drug cartel big enough that it was featured in a major motion picture starring Tom Cruise recently, and that he witnessed, although did not participate, in the murders of those two boys. Now, many people have called this a crazy conspiracy theory and called Billy Jack Haynes a liar and said he was suffering from delusions, which could all be very true. But next week, Wrestle Chat will take a look at both sides of the coin, and we will bring you what Billy Jack Haynes had to say about the murders, and these are established murders, of Kevin Ives and Don Henry, the Boys on the Track. So hopefully you'll stay tuned for that. That sounds very interesting, but let's get to Monday Night Raw. And it starts off with none other than Ronda Rousey, who got more exercise picking up the mic she just threw down than she actually probably has wrestling the entire time she's been in the WWE. She came out and she basically said, the women are the main event of WrestleMania for the first time ever, and you're welcome. Meaning that it was because of her. Threw down the mic and said that's all she has to say, but then she picked the mic back up and said, actually, I have something else to say. And she ranted a little on Becky Lynch and Charlotte, and then she threw the microphone down, and then she said, wait a minute, I have something else to say. And by the time she finished, Becky Lynch was out. And Becky Lynch did a pretty good job. You know, the little weirdo thing that she keeps calling Ronda Rousey is kind of sticking, because Ronda Rousey does come off as a bit of a weird individual. And she basically says, look, you were irrelevant. Came here with a big fat contract and you were given the world on a silver platter and every opportunity in the world, and the fans collectively yawned. And it wasn't until I came along that you were even relevant. So don't take credit for the WrestleMania thing. That would be me. Then Charlotte comes out and basically says the same thing. And we're told we are going to get a match in which basically it's a beat the clock match. triple threat sort of beat the clock match, in which all three members of the Riot Squad are going to compete singly against Ronda, Becky, and Charlotte, with the one who beats their opponent in the least amount of time being declared the winner. Now, this is comical because it absolutely indicates that all three of these girls will win. See, that's the thing that drives me crazy. They didn't say, well, the girl who wins in the shortest time, if she wins, or the girl who manages to beat her opponent, if you all manage to beat your opponent, then we're going to go to the time. And whoever beat your opponent in the least amount of time, that'll be the winner. They didn't do that. They said the winner of this match will be the girl who beats her opponent in the least amount of time, but the winner will definitely be either Charlotte, Ronda, or Becky, meaning that the Riot Squad is definitely losing every single match. That doesn't even make any sense. And first we get Ronda. It goes Ronda, Charlotte, and then naturally Becky. Now, the Riot Squad has been doing just about exactly nothing for I don't know how long. Since we saw Ruby Riot kind of just dusted at a pay-per-view by Ronda and then put up a little better fight, but still lose. The next night on Raw. And then we had the Riot Squad in the Elimination Chamber, and they did okay, but they, you know, that's it. That's it, really. And one at a time, with the exception of Ruby Riot, Ruby Riot didn't technically lose, did she? Charlotte Flair put Ruby Riot in her figure four leg lock, but it was a little bit too late to beat Ronda's already established time, technically, even though it was very obvious that Charlotte would have won the match. Because she didn't beat the time, the buzzer went off and she had to relinquish the hold. So Charlotte's out of it. Charlotte then attacks Becky Lynch before her match. And Becky Lynch does something very odd, and I'm sure she was told to do it, but I just don't understand why. Becky Lynch gets basically just a boot to the face. That's it. And yes, she got a hit from Charlotte, and she's selling it like she got put through a table. She's pulling herself up in the corner. Oh, can I go on? Can I fight anymore? What Becky Lynch is this? The Becky Lynch we all subscribed to was the hard-ass Becky Lynch who fought through this stuff and one thing didn't destroy her. And now all of a sudden she's like, oh, I'm the underdog. I'm fighting from the bottom all the time. Oh, that's not the Becky Lynch we subscribe to. You better fix Becky Lynch. Because if you continue to have her be this underdog, always fighting from the bottom, that's not the Becky Lynch that the fans were crazy about. I'm telling you, it's going to hurt. So Liv Morgan takes the fall to Becky Lynch, and Becky Lynch wins. So we have, basically, Sarah Logan loses despite the fact. Now, here's the thing about the Sarah Logan and Ronda Rousey match. Sarah Logan starts the match out by basically running away. For a good, I don't know, 30 seconds or so. And still loses in like a minute and 40. So the indication is that Sarah Logan can't hang with Ronda Rousey for a minute. Ruby Riot is in Charlotte Flair's finisher and certainly was not getting out of it. But time ran out. So the indication is Ruby Riot can't hang with Charlotte Flair for 2 minutes. And last but not least, Liv Morgan can't hang with Becky Lynch for a minute and 30 seconds or 40 seconds. So the Riot Squad, again, have just been decimated into being irrelevant. If they can't hang with anyone for a minute, 2 minutes, then what's the point of them even being in the Federation? I mean, at this point, if you're a competitor, and I know I said that word doesn't exist, but in kayfabe, you're a competitor. and you can't hang with your opponent for 2 minutes, then what the hell? Would you just not say, well, forget it? I mean, I guess I'm just not good enough. Why would you keep busting your ass? So I think this did a lot of damage. And then they announced, well, next week it's the Riot Squad collectively against Charlotte and Ronda and Becky. And if they betray their team, they're out of WrestleMania, so they won't be betraying their team. Well, look, this is probably where they'll give the Riot Squad their win back. Somehow something will happen and someone will get the win from there. But this did them no favors. Plus, it didn't do anything for the Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, and Ronda Rousey feud, because as Ronda Rousey correctly pointed out after she's standing on the aisle just about to go backstage, when Becky Lynch wins, Ronda Rousey simply says, you didn't win anything. What did you win? We all won our matches. What the hell did you win? And she's absolutely right. She won nothing. You beat your opponent in the least amount of time, but it's not the same opponent. She won nothing. So really, I thought this whole entire beginning to Monday Night Raw, Mike, was for absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it actually was for absolutely nothing. And it's sad because we thought all of the three Riot Squad members had some great potential. You know, I mean, we've talked ad nauseum about the gimmick before they'd given her this gimmick about you know, being a Viking or whatever it is. We talked about ad nauseum the stone cold country girl gimmick they'd given Sarah Logan, and how her style was something totally different. Well, they've kind of muted that a little bit, and it doesn't make sense.
No, they kind of gave Becky Lynch the gimmick we were almost pitching for Sarah Logan. So not a great start to Raw, Todd. I mean, these matches meant nothing in the long run.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right there. Like you said, I remember back when they did the beat the clock matches, they didn't do like 1, 2, 3 in a row. They did like here and there on the show, and it was just a big mess right there too. I didn't like that.
I just don't even like the beat the clock matches at all, because what do you win? What does it matter? You know, I mean, in the long run, does it really matter if you beat your opponent in 1:30 or 1:32 seconds? You know, kind of crazy. We then get the news that Finn Balor will be fighting not only Bobby Lashley, but also Lio Rush. And if he's able to get by them, he will then be granted a title shot at WrestleMania for the Intercontinental belt. Lio Rush comes out and says, thanks to Braun Strowman, I won't be competing. I'm hurt. But you're not off the hook. He introduces Jinder Mahal as Bobby Lashley's tag team partner, along with the Singhs. So collectively, we have the following people: Bobby Lashley, Jinder Mahal, former heavyweight champion, Lio Rush, who's injured but still can be a distraction, and both Singh brothers, all at ringside against Finn Balor. This was the moment, folks, that the WWE could have used to bring the demon Finn Balor out. Finn Balor should have got his ass kicked. And then the powers that be could have said, you're not fighting Finn Balor at WrestleMania. Don't worry. You're fighting the demon at WrestleMania. That would have made sense. Here's what doesn't make sense. Finn Balor beats everyone. Everyone. There's a point in this match. Now, everyone asks me, why don't you like Finn Balor? Well, I will give you the precise reason, and you can go back on your DVR, and Bobby Lashley at one point in this match, all 280-pound brick of Bobby Lashley runs full speed at Finn Balor to spear him, I guess, and Finn Balor stops his momentum dead by just standing in front of him and grabbing him around the waist and doing a leg takedown. That's because Finn Balor does not understand he's 170 pounds. That spot made absolutely no sense. Bobby Lashley would have run him over like a steamroller. He's not stopping. That would be like standing in front of a charging bull and saying, well, don't worry, I'm going to grab his legs when he gets close to me and the bull will fall down. Yeah, you try that. Totally illogical. Finn Balor wrestles totally illogically for a man his size. And I'm tired of watching it. It's boring and it's dumb. Now, the right move here would have been for Finn Balor to be cheated out of this victory by the Singh brothers, by Leo Rush, whatever the hell happens, and Bobby Lashley gets the pinfall. Bobby Lashley could have then said, I don't have to worry about Finn Balor at WrestleMania. And the powers that be could have said, no, you don't have to worry about Finn Balor at WrestleMania. You have to worry about the demon at WrestleMania. That would have made sense. What happened here not only doesn't make any sense, no one cares about this match. At least no one I know cares about this match, Mike. And I just, they handled it completely wrong.
Yeah, they did handle it completely wrong. And, you know, again, I can remember many a time when I don't know, Rhino was in ECW, and he fought like Jerry Lynn or somebody like that. And, you know, and he absolutely ran over that guy, you know, because Rhino is what, 280 pounds, and Jerry Lynn is what, 190?
Right.
You know?
You saw the spot I was talking about, right?
Yeah, I know that spot.
Yeah. Yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah, and it looked ridiculous. And your scenario, because of the number of people that was out there, where you had all these guys get involved in a match, even though they said that Leo Rush was hurt, which I would assume was a worked injury.
Yes.
You know? So, yeah, he's hurt, but he's going to get involved in a match. All right. That would have made more sense, because you got when I saw that happen and you had all three of those guys, the Sings and Leo Rush, I said, somebody's going to get involved that shouldn't be involved in this match. That's what you
right.
said.
And here's the funny thing, Mike. If I thought, wait a minute, I thought Baron Corbin, Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre were this super team. How come it wasn't Drew McIntyre or Baron Corbin? I know they had matches on the show later on, but I mean, wouldn't that have made more sense than Jinder Mahal? The whole thing made zero sense. And Todd, I'm sure you also saw the spot I'm talking about. That's just not logical wrestling.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it just don't make any sense right there. And they had matches later on in the evening. They should have came out in each other's matches and tried to interfere or something, but it just don't make sense right there as well.
Well, if you're having those guys be a team, I don't know why you wouldn't pick Drew McIntyre or Baron Corbin. I don't know why you wouldn't. So, I mean, was there ever anything with Jinder Mahal and Bobby Lashley that I missed? I don't think so. So there's no excitement for that buildup, at least as far as I'm concerned, there isn't. We then get to the tag team champions, the Revival, facing Aleister Black and Ricochet. And this was the best match of the night, but it didn't receive the reaction it should, because the Revival have never been built up, even having won the championships, as being worthy champions. They have lost virtually every single time. I think they've won once since they become the tag team champions, one time. Now, I want to point something out to you all at this point. I probably should wait till the Samoa Joe match, but I'll do it now. If you're not the heavyweight champion of either federation, I don't know why you want to be the champion. Because you never win. The Revival have lost virtually every match since they won the tag team titles, making their tag team titles seem absolutely worthless. Sasha and Bayley go over to SmackDown and instantly lose to the Iconics, making their tag team championship look virtually worthless. Bobby Lashley has lost numerous times and lost again last night. Okay, he's not the guy that got pinned. He still lost. making his reign as champion almost worthless. And Samoa Joe has dropped 3 weeks in a row to Rey Mysterio clean. He then drops to Kofi Kingston after Kofi Kingston has already been beaten and battered clean. He then goes over to Raw to fight Kurt Angle, loses to Kurt Angle clean. Three straight losses. Who the hell wants to be the champion in this federation unless you're Brock Lesnar or Daniel Bryan? And even Daniel Bryan suffered his share of losses. Brock Lesnar and Ronda Rousey are about safe. Asuka's dropping matches as the champion, isn't she? If you're not Brock Lesnar or Ronda Rousey with a belt around your waist, you're dropping matches in this federation. I don't understand it. So once again, it's a good match. But instead of having it end in a brawl, having it end in a controversy, having it end in no contest or something that would indicate, wow, we're going to see another great match here at some point. No, it just, okay, we beat them. We're better than the champions. So it doesn't really, why does it matter if they have a belt if it's clearly established, Mike, that they're far better than the champions?
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, I just don't get it. I mean, going way back to how they treated Sasha, when she was the champion, the WWE Women's Champion at the time. Well, she never really successfully defended it.
Right.
You know. That's right. So I mean, why would you put it around her when nobody's going to buy the fact that she's going to defend it successfully? Same thing for these guys. Why would you put it around them when they're dropping matches? I mean, as I remember, the Honky Tonk Man never really dropped matches, right?
No. Look, the bottom line is your champions mean nothing if they never win. The reason they're your champions presumably is because they're the best. They're the cream of the crop. And if you show on a regular basis every week, no, actually, they're the lowest ones in the barrel. This tag team's better. This tag team's better. This tag team's better. This woman is better. This woman is better. This woman is better. This dude is better. This dude is better. This dude is better. What's the point? What's the point of being the champion if you never win? Do they do that to Brock Lesnar? No. Have they done that to Ronda Rousey? No. Ask yourself why. So the women's tag team champion, one half anyway, Sasha comes out. Bayley is obviously with her, and she fights Natty in a match that was actually pretty good. Beth Phoenix is in Natty's corner. Naturally, Nia Jax and Tamina Snuka attack. They're fought off virtually single-handedly by Beth Phoenix, who flubs at least three spots in 5 seconds. No help from Tamina or Nia, who certainly weren't cooperating. But throw that all aside, because then they do the announcement of the Hart Foundation going in to the Hall of Fame, and we cut back to Natty, who is genuinely crying in the ring. And you have to say, you know, it's been a rough time for Natty, and that's a nice thing. It was a good thing. So I'm not even going to pick too much on the match. The match was pretty good, actually. But the moment with Natty realizing her dad's going into the Hall of Fame and stuff, that's very nice. That's a very nice moment. And I want you all to remember that moment, because the next moment is going to blow my head off my shoulders. Alexa Bliss has her moment of bliss. This time not on the rampway. Nope, they've got a set for her in the ring this time. And her guest is Braun Strowman, who she is going to attempt, as the host of WrestleMania, to broker a peace deal between Braun Strowman and two guys that are so irrelevant to the world of professional wrestling and even really entertainment that nobody knows who the hell they are. Two chuckleheads from Saturday Night Live. And the big build-up is one of the guys dared to ask Braun Strowman backstage if wrestling was actually real, as if he's never been asked that question before. And Braun Strowman proceeds to choke him all through a commercial break. Choke him for 5 minutes because when we come back from the commercial break, he's still choking him. And when he drops him, this chucklehead from Saturday Night Live doesn't even have the brains to sell it. Doesn't even have the brains to sell it. You've just been choked by a man about, oh, I don't know, seven times your size for 5 minutes. Doesn't even sell it. So now they're going to try to play some cutesy thing where they're on satellite and the one guy's acting like a bad guy. He's putting on a New York Yankees hat when they're in Boston, beaming it to Boston. And I'll tell you, if I'm Braun Strowman, the writing's on the wall for you, my brother. Last WrestleMania, you had to team with a 10-year-old boy in a gimmick match that was basically just for comedy and kicks. Now, apparently, your big rival going into the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal are two third-rate comedians from Saturday Night Live. That's what they've got for you for WrestleMania. And I want to point out to everyone who enters that Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal and we're told, look, you're a part of WrestleMania. You've earned it. You're going to be in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and that is a big event. Andre the Giant's one of the most, you know, iconic figures ever. And for you to be included in that means we certainly do still think very highly of you here in the WWE. Really? You put two comedians from Saturday Night Live in it. What did they do 350 days a year to earn that spot? So they instantly get the exact same treatment as Rusev will get, Nakamura will get, the B team will get, all the people who don't have a match. They're going to get that exact same caveat, huh? So now how do you look these people in the eye and say, well, the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal is still a vital, you know, you still have to be a somebody to get in that. No, you don't. Two chuckleheads are in it. And they're involved in a feud. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? This is a man that upon his debut destroyed all three members of the Shield by himself. This is a man that supposedly was put in a garbage truck and it didn't even faze him. Destroyed Kane. Beat the hell out of Roman Reigns. Tipped over an ambulance. Tried to kill Brock Lesnar by knocking down the entire scaffolding. And he can't deal with 245-pound comedians. I don't know what to say, Mike. I mean, I literally was looking at that audience reaction, and the audience was in a mixture of disbelief and just disgust.
You know, there are certain celebrities that get it. You know, and we've talked about this. Bob Uecker got it, you know, when Andre the Giant, whom the Battle Royal is named after, choked him, you looked at Uecker and his eyes were popping out of his head and he was selling it, you know. Pete Rose, he got it when Kane tombstoned him, you know, he got it. He didn't pop right back up again and didn't sell the tombstone pile driver. He got it. You know, these two guys do not get it. They just don't. And that's the thing, especially that guy. You know, if I'm sitting there being supposedly, we know it's a work, but supposedly choked, my eyes are going to be popping out of my head and I'm going to be coughing all over the place. You know, that's what you should be doing. This guy didn't do it. I mean, like you said,
He doesn't give a damn. Okay? And here's the worst thing, Mike. They're portraying him as the heel. How is this heel a threat to Braun Strowman? How is this heel that you're presenting, a comedian who's not been in a wrestling ring in his entire life, how is this guy a threat to a man who tipped over an ambulance with his bare hands and destroyed a car with his bare hands and has torn through virtually every single professional wrestler he's come into contact with, but his big ultimate WrestleMania feud is going to be with a comedian. How in the hell do you pull that one off, Mike?
I really don't know. I just don't. That's the thing. And I mean, if I'm some of these guys on Raw, like Braun Strowman and stuff like that, and we can get in on this on Sunday, but if I'm some of these guys on Raw and I'm hearing that that Fox wants a little bit edgier of a product, I'm going to the bosses and I'm saying, put me on SmackDown. Because at least on SmackDown, I know I'm gonna be able to do what I can do, maybe, you know.
Yeah, look, this is garbage for Braun Strowman. This is truly proof positive that they have given up on Braun Strowman. Now, maybe they'll try to rebuild him at some point, but they've basically given up on Braun Strowman. You can't even find a feud for him. You got to get two chuckleheads from Saturday Night Live and one to play the bad guy. Oh, God almighty. Wow. I mean, wow. Todd, that just stinks on ice, man.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they can't find anything for Braun Strowman to do but send him up with the two guys from Saturday Night Live. These two guys I never really heard of. Oh, boy.
And Todd, now the whole Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal is just about Braun Strowman and two Saturday Night Live guys. That's it. Everybody else, it doesn't mean anything. So to say it didn't really mean anything to begin with to be in it for a lot of these people is one thing. But now it really doesn't mean anything because the only buildup they give it, they're not getting guys on there saying, I'm entering the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal and I got to win it for this reason or that reason or this reason. No. They're not giving it any time at all. It's just you're the afterthoughts. You're the leftovers. You're the guys nobody picked to be on the team. You know, that's what it is. It's just terrible. And I don't even know if there's a women's one. They haven't mentioned it. I assume there is, but they've not mentioned it. We're 2 weeks away. They've not mentioned it. It's unbelievable. Just unbelievable. Anyway, we get Baron Corbin after confronting Kurt Angle, and he comes out and he gets his victory back on Apollo Crews. And this means exactly what? He lost last week, he wins this week. So what was the point of losing last week? Was there a point? One of the writers from WWE has to explain to me why there's a point to that. There is no point. It's just bullshit. The whole thing's just bullshit. Lazy writing, bullshit. Now, I'm happy to know that Triple H must listen to this show. Because when Triple H comes out, he uses our exact line of Batista. And he says, give me what I want, what I really, really want, what I want, what I want, what I really, really want. That's exactly what Batista sounded like. And you know, it's pretty funny. We use the same line here, that's exactly what he sounded like. So now they've added fuel to the fire, and Triple H has said, well, Batista wants my career on the line. Well, if there's ever been a reason to root for Batista, I suppose that's it. Because I'm telling you right now, I am tired of Triple H. I am tired of even The Undertaker. I am tired of all these people coming out of retirement and stealing the spotlight away. There are people that's going to be in this Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal playing second fiddle to comedians. While Triple H and Batista, one of which has done nothing for wrestling in years, and the other of which has had his moment and more in the spotlight, take up 18, 19 minutes of time when you could have had two matches maybe and got four more people in. I don't care. If he beats Batista, fine. Then what did he accomplish? Nothing. You beat a guy who hasn't wrestled in 5 years. If he loses, it's not like he's not going to get back in the ring. How many loser must leave the Federation matches have we saw? Loser must retire matches we saw. And yeah, they really retired, didn't they? They really left the Federation. Worthless. waste of time, Mike, and I'm getting tired of watching the guys trying to hang on and steal a spotlight from the young.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, if they were going to go this way in the first place, they should have. Batista, we've said it before, Batista should have been the face in this thing. Because, he's been playing faces in his movies more than he's been playing bad guys, you know.
Yep.
And two, the way he cut the interview, the previous interviews, was not heel interviews. They were face interviews, you know. So, but again, we've said it before. Oh, Triple H just cannot seem to be the heel. Whereas you look at his father-in-law. His father-in-law has no compunctions about, oh, I'm going to play the heel.
Now, Triple H has to have that adoration. Even when he is the heel, he still has to get in something that makes it's starting to get annoying. As a wrestling fan, that's starting to get annoying. If you want some nostalgia, that's fine. Then, you know, put yourself on the pre-show. Dare to do that. Dare to say, look, guys, we've had our moment in the spotlight. We're going to put ourselves on the pre-show, so one of you guys that's on the pre-show get a spot on the main card. Oh, you won't do that, though, will you? Because we're the big attraction. Please. You haven't even mentioned a woman's battle royal, and you're eating up TV time, fighting back and forth over some imaginary feud that didn't even happen, that makes no sense. Makes no sense. I mean, it might have made some sense if Batista came back as a face saying, you won't let me back in this company. I have called. I have tried everything. I tell you what it is. You got jealous. You got jealous because the fans were liking me more than they liked you. I was getting to be the top guy in your little clique, and you knew it. And you used any excuse to get rid of me. And when you finally did get rid of me and I said, you know what, I'd like to come back. And you were then now you're the big cheese, right? And you won't let me back. And goading and goading and goading Triple H until finally Triple H says, you want to come back, you have to fight me. That might have made sense. Doesn't make sense the other way. It just doesn't make sense. Because no one believes Batista cares. He's a Hollywood movie star. What the fuck does he care? He doesn't care. And you can't make us believe he cares, so that's just a dumb storyline. And once again, lazy writing. So Kurt Angle, it's announced, is going to fight Samoa Joe, who's coming over from SmackDown. Now, I have mixed feelings about this. First off, when Samoa Joe was in TNA and they hooked up him up with Kurt Angle, it was really to bring Samoa Joe along. Samoa Joe knows that. Samoa Joe knows that Kurt Angle mentored the fuck out of him. And Samoa Joe probably was the first guy to raise his hand and say, I'd like to lose to Kurt Angle. If he really is retiring, I would be, you know, it would be an honor for me to be one of his last matches. I get that, and I respect the hell out of Samoa Joe for that. If I'm Vince McMahon, I say, I respect that, Joe, tremendously. I understand where you're coming from. No. You are a champion right now. We cannot have you drop matches to Kurt Angle as the champion before WrestleMania. We can't do that, Joe. I'm sorry, but we can't. So unfortunately, that's not going to happen. I mean, that's just the way it is. But no, here comes Samoa Joe out there. And he looks just like a big, fat loser. I can't beat Rey Mysterio. I can't beat Kofi Kingston, even after he's been through three people. And I can't beat a 50-some-odd-year-old Kurt Angle who moves like a turtle climbing uphill in molasses. But boy, I'm going to slap around that Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania. Yeah, that just take the belt off him. If you think that low of Samoa Joe, just take the belt off him. Because he does not look like a champion. He looks like a jabron. He looks like a jabron. Now, again, I'm sure Joe wanted to lose. I'm sure Joe wanted that match. But I'm also sure that both Kurt Angle and Joe knew in their heart of hearts, this probably doesn't bode well for Joe. And I just never would have done it. And now tonight he's going to fight AJ Styles. And I'm sure AJ Styles is more than happy to lose to Kurt Angle. But at least it doesn't kill AJ Styles if he does, because AJ's not a champion right now. AJ's not the best guy, your representative. No. He was, but he's not now. And his match is not for a championship at WrestleMania. And AJ is not portrayed as some big, huge, monstrous martial arts expert type guy, MMA fighting, you know, powerhouse. Samoa Joe looks ridiculous now. And whether or not Samoa Joe volunteered and wanted to do this or not, that's irrelevant. It never should have occurred, Mike.
It never should have occurred. And look, as I recall, and this isn't an Impact show or a TNA show, but as I recall, when Kurt Angle was going on his last run in TNA, I do recall him losing some of those matches. He didn't just win every single time out. So you could have absolutely had Joe. Yeah, Joe might have wanted to do this, but like you said, tell Joe, no, you're the champ. You're a champion. Champions aren't supposed to lose. You're gonna, and it would have made Joe every bit the heel if he's gonna, even a stronger heel if he beats Kurt Angle in his matches to his last, leading up to his last match. It would have helped Joe to win the match.
I agree with you. If I was booking this, I would have said this. I would have said Kurt Angle has Samoa Joe in the friggin' ankle lock. Joe tries to get to the ropes because he's a tough dude, man. He's not giving up right away, and Angle rolls him back over to the center, and it ain't looking good, and Baron Corbin hits ringside. When he hits ringside, Kurt Angle lets go of the leg lock, thinking he's going to be attacked. Corbin jumps back off the ring apron. Joe locks him in the coquina clutch. Finished. Then we could say, God damn it, Kurt Angle was going to beat Samoa Joe, and that friggin' Baron Corbin, who I guess he's going to fight at WrestleMania, people are saying that really is the match. I still say it's not. If it is, how does that not promote it? How does that not promote it? I would think that's kind of easy booking, Todd, and I don't know why they didn't do it.
To be honest with you, I don't know either. But like you said with Kurt Angle, when everything going on, I would have Samoa Joe like just to not to tap out, to tap Angle out or make him submit or something, or just pin him. This way, they not to kill his rhythm as U.S. champion.
Look, Mike, what would have been wrong with having Samoa Joe in that ankle lock, like I said, get to the ropes once, get pulled away from the ropes. When Baron Corbin hits ringside, the referee literally tries to stop Corbin. And while he stops Corbin, Joe is tapping, but the referee don't see it. So we've clearly now established Kurt Angle won. Kurt Angle lets go of the lock to try to get a hold of Corbin. Gets a hold of Corbin, maybe, gives him a shot, but runs into the coquina clutch, and that's it. Referee raises his hand three times and signals he's out. That's heat, no?
That is heat. And again, like I said, that furthers Joe's heel gimmick, you know? Yeah, we got the people cheering Joe as he's coming out, but everybody knows he's supposed to be a heel. Everybody knows it. So that would have furthered his heel gimmick. Just like Drew McIntyre went over beating Kurt Angle with the ankle lock with his own move.
Right.
That furthered McIntyre's heel gimmick.
No, I agree with you 100%. And look, the bottom line of the situation is they may cheer Joe when he comes out, but they also chant "you suck" at Kurt Angle. They don't think that. Sometimes fans just want to chant along with something, and that's become a thing. Everybody goes, Joe, Joe, Joe. It doesn't mean they like him. Does it mean they think Kurt Angle sucks? It's just become one of those things. They would have booed the hell out of Samoa Joe if that happened. And I promise you that Kurt Angle, if you gave him that idea, he would have said, that's a damn good idea. Helps Joe. Helps me. To make sure, you know, people don't want my last match at WrestleMania to be a loss now. Helps Corbin, if that's who I'm really fighting. It helps everybody. So I don't get it. I just don't get it. So we get Drew McIntyre hitting the ring, and here's the thing that bothers me the most. As I tell you every week, I scan social media looking for things that fans liked or disliked because I like to know where the fans' pulse is on these things. And I cannot believe how many fans are saying, I didn't like that Drew McIntyre went to the leukemia diagnosis thing. What are you talking about? Drew McIntyre took that mic and within 3 minutes made everybody hate him. That is absolutely 100% heel 101 perfection. And the reason it's perfection is he never goes over the top. McIntyre always looks like he's very serious about what he's saying, and he's not like trying to be just evil to be evil, which is a great thing. Because very few heels do that nowadays. Very few. He challenges Roman Reigns, who comes out and does exactly the right thing. He says, Roman Reigns accepts your challenge. However, Joe has something to say to you. Never speak about my family again, and just beats the hell out of Drew McIntyre. And in the correct move, people are upset about this too. Oh, yeah, but then McIntyre kind of went over. Yes, because they're fighting at WrestleMania. If you have anything to be concerned about, it's that McIntyre's probably not winning at WrestleMania. This probably solidified the fact that McIntyre's not winning at WrestleMania. But he still got over on Roman Reigns with a low blow and a Claymore kick. That is the right move, except it tips your hat to what's going to happen at WrestleMania. I would have booked it differently. I would have booked that they both got offense in and they both had to be separated and nobody got the better of anybody, because then you're not sure what's going to happen at WrestleMania. When you have that happen and Roman Reigns has been gotten over on now twice, you're pretty damn sure that at WrestleMania he gets his revenge, and that, I don't like that type of booking. It takes some of the thrill out of it. You got to realize you're dealing with smart fans, and they know. They know that's the tip off. Don't give them that tip off. Have it a break apart. Locker room's empty. Everybody breaks them apart. Much better. So I thought McIntyre did a good job, Mike, but again, I think the booking of that gives away WrestleMania.
Right. And that's the deal. I'll put it to you this way. In pro baseball, there's a theory that some pitchers will tip their pitches. And you can tell how they're tipping them by how they're standing on the mound or whatever, or what they do with their hands and stuff like that. That's what they did here. It's like they're tipping their pitch. You know, he's gonna win, but we have to make But other than that, everything like you said, everything was spot on. Other than that.
Yeah, I agree. McIntyre did an awesome job. Awesome job on the mic by McIntyre. Now, we didn't mention the Elias segments. I don't know what you're doing with Elias. Because I'm telling you right now, if you put him in these type of segments, you're literally aggravating the hell as this arrogant, no-talent heel. And then when people said, well, he does have some talent. He's no singer, but he can play the guitar. They started to like him. They started to like his one-liners and his sarcastic wit and things like that. And he said, all right, make him a face then. You made him a face for about a month. That's not working. Make him a heel again. Now you got him outside in New York, and he's oblivious to the fact he's being robbed by New Yorkers. He's oblivious to the fact that people don't like him. He's going to go right back to being a face. If you're going to give him these comical things to do, he's going to go right back to being a face. So I have no idea what you're trying to do with him. None. If you're trying to make him a tweener, that doesn't work either. I throw up my hands. I don't know what you're doing with Elias. I'm sure he doesn't know what you're doing with him either. But here's the kicker that destroyed Monday Night Raw for me. Drew McIntyre goes back into the backstage area where he finds Dean Ambrose. Now, again, Drew McIntyre is gold. Gold for this federation. Because Drew McIntyre knows when to give and take. Drew McIntyre sees Dean Ambrose and looks kind of incredulously at him. And Ambrose says, "What is it that you call me there, a cockroach?" "I guess I am, because after all this stuff, I'm still standing." And Drew McIntyre says, "I will straight up tell you, I don't know how you're standing. I straight up don't know how you're standing. But I guarantee you, you're not going to be standing after this match." That's giving Ambrose a little by saying, "I can't even believe you're here. But I'm going to take care of it." But here's the maddening thing. So you're telling me that if Dean Ambrose did not request a match out of the clear blue sky with Drew McIntyre that wasn't scheduled, we wouldn't have a main event on Raw? That was your main event. Your main event happened by accident? You had nothing planned then. That was it. You were going off the air, I guess. Or you had no big finale. What the hell? Do you think your fans are that stupid? Do you think your fans are that stupid? If you had the big break apart between Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre, where the locker rooms emptied, you could have very easily made a case that in that brawl, one of the guys that was scheduled for the main event has been injured. We were going to have this be the main event, whatever it happened to be. But because that hasn't happened, we're left without the main event, and then Dean Ambrose could have said, "Well, I challenge Drew McIntyre." Maybe McIntyre was going to fight somebody anyway as the main event. And it ends up being instead Dean Ambrose. Then you'd say, okay, well, they had something planned, but things went awry and Dean Ambrose filled in. No, apparently you had no main event. Apparently you were just going off the air. That is about the stupidest booking I've ever seen Monday Night Raw do.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, yes, it is. And look, here's the deal. It happened. That whole segment happened at about the 9:30 p.m. Central Time mark. All right? That's when it happened. So you're telling me if that segment backstage hadn't happened, 9:30, maybe 9:40 Central Time, you're off the air?
Right. You're going to trudge out that? You're going to trudge out two preliminary guys to fight? Come on. That's what I'm saying.
Give me a break.
It's awful. That is awful. That is disrespecting your fans. You had to have a match scheduled and then change it to Ambrose and McIntyre. So advertise all night that Drew McIntyre is going to fight. I don't care who. Apollo Crews, if you want. Whoever, it doesn't really matter. You could just say this is a main event. I would have had it been Seth Rollins. Because then we'd all be worried. Wait a minute, Seth Rollins is hurt before WrestleMania? Oh no. What's that going to entail? And then Seth could have said, "I'm fine, I'm going out there." And Ambrose could have said, "Let me. You got a huge match coming up at WrestleMania. Let me handle this one." And Seth could have said, "Well, I owe Drew McIntyre." You could say, "Well, yeah, but not like me. Okay? I owe him too." Seth could have said, "You know what? You're right. You're right. You want this? Go for it, man." That would have been great. Then we knew we had a main event, but it was changed. But no, we had no main event. Like Mike said, at 9:30 or 10:30 my time, I guess you're just going off the air. Or you're just going to present something. I don't know what the hell. It was just terrible. That is absolutely, unforgivably terrible booking, Todd.
Oh, absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a terrible booking right there with that main event. Well, like you said, like around 10:30, they ran out of matches for to fill in for like a main event. They put in like the
right.
last 10 minutes of a main event.
Right. If there wasn't a challenge backstage, they had nothing. They were gone. They were off the air. Ridiculous. Now, I should say that I really feel we may run a little over time here. Look, I really feel that the Seth Rollins and Paul Heyman thing was mishandled. Number one, Seth Rollins is really doing the white bread face character. Oh, it's us against Brock Lesnar, guys. And then literally says, you know, I'm at an autograph signing and everybody at the table is saying, please, Seth, please beat Brock Lesnar. Oh, yeah, come on. Come on. Paul Heyman comes out, says you got no chance. It's the universe and you against Brock, and I like those odds. And literally, here's the line that killed me. Here's the line that I said, well, you've jumped the shark and this is stupid. Paul Heyman says, and of course you're going to say, I want your thoughts and prayers as I'm going into battle against Brock Lesnar, because that's what you guys do in your generation. Seth Rollins literally, and I'm sure the line was written for him, Seth Rollins literally has to say, no, 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 I'm not asking for thoughts and prayers. I'm granting them. You're granting prayers, so you're God. Well, that's a great line. That's a great line for a babyface. Congratulations. He should have told the truth. He should have said, people are coming up to me saying, we're sick and tired of having no champion on Raw. So I hope, not please, Mr. Rollins, please beat Brock. Could you do it for little Timmy? He's sick in bed. Grow up. All you should have said was, all these fans, I didn't realize how many fans really don't like the fact that Brock Lesnar is a no-show champion. And everybody's telling me, we don't feel like we have a champion. We don't feel like we're represented. We want you to win because we want to be represented. And you know what? They deserve to be represented. And I'm not asking for their thoughts and prayers, nor am I trying to act like I'm sticking up for the fans necessarily, but they're right. So I want to be the champion. Because that's the ultimate dream of anybody in this sport, is to be the champion. So I want to be the champion. But they're right when they say they don't have one. He can wear the belt. That doesn't make him a champion. But when you sit there and say, everybody's coming up to me with tears in their eyes and trembling lips saying, please, please, Mr. Rollins, can you please beat Brock Lesnar? Please. Now you've made me not like Seth Rollins, because that's just stupid. That's just absolutely pablum stupid. Okay? Babies don't believe that. So you've lost all the serious fans now, Seth. You've lost them. All you had to do was tell the truth and say the real fans are saying we're not represented. We don't have a champion. Lesnar may have a belt, but he's never there. Nobody's coming up to you with tears in their eyes and trembling lips and praying, please, oh, please, mighty Seth, slay the beast. Come on. Is that what you really think that we're going to believe? Is that what you really want to make yourself? You want to make yourself, you know, Jesus on the cross? Is that what you're trying to do? I will sacrifice myself for the fans. Ay. So now I'm not, you know what, I'm annoyed. I'm annoyed with Seth Rollins. In some ways, you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe, you know, this isn't going to work. Because I don't think Seth gets it the whole way. Because Seth Rollins is an important guy, okay? And if I read that line, and that was written for me, and I said, I'm supposed to say people are coming up to me begging me, please, please, Mr. Rollins, I'd say, I'm not saying that. I will say they're coming up to me hoping I win. They're coming up to me saying, man, I hope you win because I really don't feel we have a champion. I'll say that. And I'm sure as hell not going to say I'm granting the prayers of the fans. I'll say I want to be the champion, and the fans want a champion, and I'm going to make sure they get one. But I'm not going to say I'm granting prayers. I'm the savior. That's what they actually have Seth Rollins portraying. I'm the savior of the wrestling business. All of the miscreant fans with snot noses and tears in their eyes who paid $50 to have my autograph are getting the picture wet with their tears saying, can you please be... Really, come on now. How melodramatic do you want this damn thing to be? This is exactly why fans are turning away from this crapola, because you always take it too far rather than to just be adult about it. There was no reason to say anything except a ton of fans at an autograph signing session, and every one of them said Brock Lesnar is not representative of a champion in this sport. He's never here. His matches stink. And we're tired of it. And I agree with him. And I'm changing it. That's all he had to say. Nope. Nope. It has to be Babe Ruth pointing to the fences with little Jimmy in the hospital saying, I'm going to hit this one for you, kid. Mike, that really put me in a bad mood.
You see, that line is something that you would have had somebody like, I don't know, Sandow would say when he was doing the intellectual savior of the masses thing, you know. Because that would fit, that type of line would fit into that gimmick. You don't want to have, you want Seth Rollins to be about a Roddy Piper type of heel, you know. Do and say the same things to the heels as you would say to the faces. You know,
Mike, I'm telling you right now. I'm telling you right now, Mike, I'm going to come straight back to you, but I'm telling you right now, that's a bad guy line. That's something like Bray Wyatt would say, I am your savior. Accept me as your savior. I will bring you to the promised land. I am the one who can grant your wishes and your prayers. Not Seth Rollins. He's a face. If you really wanted to suck the fans' ass, then here's what you say. You say, you know, I'm at an autograph signing session, and I'm not going to lie to any of you. I was watching Brock Lesnar tapes, because that's what obviously what I would do, wouldn't I? In preparation. And I said to myself, I don't know if I can beat him. And usually I'm really confident. And usually I'm really, really upbeat. And I'm saying to myself, I might be in over my head. And then I had fans coming up to me saying, Brock Lesnar's nothing. He never shows up. He's, you know, how many times a year does he actually wrestle? And each fan that came up to me and pointed that out to me, I started growing more confident, saying, no, I'm not as big. No, I'm not as strong. But he never competes. He can't possibly be in the ring condition I'm in. He can't possibly be as perfect ring form as I am. And my confidence began to grow. And with every one of these fans who came up to me and say, Lesnar ain't nothing, he never shows up, we need a champion that shows up, I began to get more and more and more confident. So for that, I thank all of you fans, because I'm going into WrestleMania 100% confident that I'm going to slay the beast. Then you've sucked the fans' ass. But no, they don't want that. They want the fans are being oppressed and held down by the evil tyrant. And I will rise from the grave and be your savior. Not because I want the belt. Not because it's going to financially make my life better. Not because of my own ego or my own goals. I'm sacrificing myself for you. Wow. Well, that's garbage, Mike, and I did not like that, I mean, at all.
Right, and look, I don't get, another thing I don't get with this whole thing is why, if they weren't afraid to use that, his cancer his leukemia as a gimmick, then why didn't they have Seth Rollins say something like this? Brock Lesnar, everybody knows this, but Brock Lesnar is a cancer on the WWE. We've been saying that for how long now on this show? That Brock Lesnar's a cancer on the WWE? You know?
If you wanted to use that line, which is controversial, I guess you could have had him say, look, my brother and my best friend, Roman Reigns, beat cancer. And that's a hell of a lot harder than beating Brock Lesnar. So that's an inspiration to me, because in some ways, Brock Lesnar's a cancer on this business. You could have had him say that. Fans would have said, that's kind of true. But the one thing you don't want him to say is, I am your savior. How is that a face line? It actually made me not like Seth Rollins. As soon as he delivered that line, said, I'm answering the fans' prayers, I'm like, okay, I'm done. How big of an ego do you have? So now you're going to compare yourself to a savior. That's what you're going to do. That's how far it's gone now. That's a Bray Wyatt thing, I'm telling you. That's a Bray Wyatt thing where you get booed. Not a Seth Rollins thing where you get cheered, Todd. That's just a bad line. Whoever wrote that is an idiot.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a bad line right there with, I'm your savior. Oh, boy, that was not a great line right there. Whoever wrote that should be fired right on the spot.
And I know fans are going to write me and say he never said he was your savior. No, he said he's answering your prayers. Well, who answers your prayers? Who do you pray to? It's just a bad line. Just fess up. It's a bad line. It's jumping the shark. I know they want to make it look like Seth Rollins is putting his whole career and his livelihood and his health on the line against a man who probably could tear him apart. And partial reason he's doing it is because of the fans. That's fine. But you don't underline it that way. You underline it the way I said, that Seth Rollins doubts he could beat Brock Lesnar. Doubts were creeping in. As WrestleMania Day became closer, Seth was starting to get more and more and more nervous. And then he was able to talk to fans. And fans were telling him he never shows up. We don't like an absentee champion. We don't like a guy that wrestles 4-minute matches twice a year. And it began to creep in his head. You're right. He wrestles 8 minutes a year. I wrestle more in one match than he wrestles in a year. And my confidence began to grow. And sometimes you know what you got to do in this business? You got to listen to the fans. Because a lot of times, all the talking heads in the back, all the so-called experts, all the wrestling gurus, all the coaches and trainers and everybody else, can't see the forest for the trees when every single one of you people out there see it very clearly. So thank you. That's what you need to do if you're a face. You say, thank you, you're the one who's inspiring me. Not say, I will fight for you and inspire you. You would think that would be obvious, Mike. I don't know.
Yeah, you would think that would be obvious. And like you said, that line would be something that you would have Bray Wyatt say, or Sandow, you know?
As heels, yeah. As heels, though, not faces. And that's the problem. That's the problem. So I didn't like that. I really, really didn't like that. So as Raw went off the air, I said to myself, well, look, it's a mixed bag. I can't kill the Kurt Angle match with Samoa Joe only because everyone's showing their respect to Kurt Angle. I get that, and he deserves their respect. I get it. I think Drew McIntyre did an excellent job all the way around. I've said since he got his ass back in this federation, he's your top heel. Quit acting like he's anything else. Quit putting him in a group. Quit having him drop matches. Quit having him do anything else except get on the goddamn microphone and be your top heel. End of the conversation. I absolutely hated the Finn Balor thing. I absolutely hated the Alexa Bliss thing. I don't even know why they had Baron Corbin and Apollo Crews again. It makes no sense. I'm tired of watching the Revival and every other champion that this federation has other than Ronda Rousey and Brock Lesnar drop matches every goddamn week when they're supposed to be the best you got to offer. But there was a couple of good things, too. Not enough to save this, though. Not enough, not even close to enough to save this. The Ambrose match with Drew McIntyre, short, but good. But not enough to save it. I was going to give it around a C-, but you know what? I don't even think it was that good. I'll give it a D+. I really think it came close to failing. If it wasn't for one or two bright spots, Drew McIntyre being one, and a pretty good solid match, at least, between Black and Ricochet and the Revival, even though the ending's ridiculous, this could have been an F. So I'll give it a D+, Mike. What about you?
I think I'll give it just a flat D, and I did like the fact that they had you don't want to undersell the Dirty Deeds, and really, if you were gonna have him win that match, that's exactly how you should sell that move. You know, it's a boom boom move, and yeah, he got out at two, but you don't want to have him kick out in less than two. To the Dirty Deeds, or get up in less than 2 seconds from the Dirty Deeds. You know, it's got to be that. And I like the fact that they didn't have. They're obviously protecting the Claymore kid. Obviously.
Oh yeah, very much. You know, I was thinking with the Dirty Deeds that what might happen is he did it really close to the corner of the ring, and maybe McIntyre would fall outside the ring and use the ring apron to help pull himself up at the count of eight or something. I really would have preferred that, where you say, well, he would have been pinned, but it's not a pinfall match, and he had the ring apron to help support his legs. That probably would have been better. But yeah, you're right. McIntyre sold it for at least six or seven. He clearly showed that if it was a pinfall match, he wouldn't have got up. So at least that was good. You see, but that's the thing with McIntyre, and that's why I like him. He gets it. He knows when to give, and he knows when to take. There's a lot of heels that's just take, 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 take. I don't want to give because it's going to make me look weak. And they fail to realize that you got to make some of your opponents look strong. Otherwise, the fans don't cheer for him. McIntyre knows this is my opportunity to make them look strong. But I'm going to go over anyway, so I don't need to worry about whether I make them look strong or not. It's to my benefit to make them look somewhat strong. He gets it. He gets it just in the little things, telling Ambrose, I flat out have no idea how you're standing here. Because what does that say? It says Dean Ambrose is one tough son of a bitch who I thought I beat the hell out of and would never see again, and here he is like a ghost. And not only is he standing here, he wants to fight me again. So for him to deliver that line underlines in the fans' minds just how tough Dean Ambrose is. That's called giving. Taking is, I know I'm winning this match with Dean Ambrose, so I can be magnanimous enough to sell him as a lunatic who just won't stay down. And he almost gets me, because he does hit me with his finisher, which if that was a normal match, I'm done. That's the beauty of a guy who gets the business, Mike.
That is the beauty of a guy who gets the business. And look, obviously, Renee Young gets the business as well. Yeah, she's married to him, Dean Ambrose, but she basically said what you said. I don't see how Dean Ambrose has been getting up. And she basically said at one point during the match, Dean, stay down.
Yep. Yeah, right. And that's what you have to sell about Dean Ambrose. See, what modern wrestling participants, as well as fans, have forgotten is the real question that you should ask yourself as a pro wrestler when you're in the ring with whoever is, what is it that I have to sell about him? Even if I'm winning, what is it that I have to sell about this guy that's going to make people also want to see him again in the future and not just make him a bum. Well, you just saw a perfect example of that. Drew McIntyre gave Dean Ambrose one of the worst beatings all around the building that we've seen in a long time, culminating with a Claymore kick that actually knocked the railing off of a set of stairs with Dean Ambrose's head in the middle of it. And it would have been very easy for Drew McIntyre to just say, oh, you want another shot at me? I'll be glad to kick you around like I did last time. But that's not what that's not what Drew McIntyre did. Drew McIntyre looked at him incredulously and said, I have no idea how you're even standing here. And in doing that, he's selling the fact that I guess no matter how much I beat Dean Ambrose, he's not going to go away. I might be able to beat him, but I no longer have any delusions that he's just going away because he's a nut and he's just going to keep getting up because he doesn't care. And that's what you have to sell about Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose, on the other hand, sells he's just too big and powerful. And even though I didn't get up by the count of 10, I'd gladly do it again. Give me 5 minutes, I'll have another match with him. That's the Dean Ambrose thing you need to sell. Shawn Michaels was a master of that. Knowing what he had to sell about the other person and getting them over for future things, not just that one match. That is what pro wrestling should really be about, Mike, and we don't see enough of it.
Right, and look, frankly, Ric Flair was a master of that, you know?
Yep.
I mean, there's a story that I think Sting tells where Flair flat out told him to no-sell the chop. You know, come out flexing and doing all that stuff, even though you could see on Sting's chest that the chop was having an effect, to no-sell it. Flair got it. There's just certain guys that get it. And know how to sell people to the point of, well, this guy's going to beat him at some point, even though this guy's gimmick is that, well, he or maybe that, well, he's going to win it by hook or crook, you know, he's going to win like Flair's was. You know, Flair's was one of those guys that, damn it, he's that good, and we hate him for it, you know.
Right, and McIntyre could have no-sold the dirty deeds. He could have rolled out of the ring, and at the count of three or four, he was on his feet, shaking his head a little bit. He didn't. He stayed down as if, well, if this was a pinfall, I'm done. But knowing it's not a pinfall, I might as well sell it like it would have knocked me fucking cold, because then it keeps strong. That's an important factor, and you don't see enough of it, unfortunately. So hats off to Drew McIntyre for that. So, yeah, I mean, I think you got something good with McIntyre. I think, we'll see him rise to the top rather quickly, because I think everybody realizes that they got something with him. But this did not save Monday Night Raw, not in my opinion anyway. Todd, what is your rating?
I gotta go with you there. A flat C.
Okay, so, I mean, look, Raw kind of failed on a lot of things this week. It failed to make us more interested in the Ronda Rousey three-way dance, and it could have made us a lot more interested. It failed to give us any interest in a tag team championship match because we've seen it. We've seen it now 4 times. It failed to give us any interest in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal because now we know it's going to be relegated to really just being about what will happen with Braun Strowman and two chuckleheads from Saturday Night Live. It's become now a comedy match, apparently. So, listen, these are things that, and it's failed to give us any interest in Finn Balor and Bobby Lashley when it could have given us the Demon Finn Balor. If you're going to give us the Demon Finn Balor anyway, this was the week to have Finn Balor get his ass kicked unfairly. He's up there against 2 people and 3 on the outside. That's 5 people. And here's another thing that they have to stop. Finn Balor is 180. care if there's momentum going over the top rope. You're not knocking down five people. You're 180 pounds. So what does that say about Bobby Lashley, Jinder Mahal, and everybody else, that they can't hold in the air 180 pounds? They can't catch 180 pounds? Five of them? That's 30 pounds apiece. 40 pounds. Not even. 35 pounds apiece. You can't do that, huh? It's going to knock you all down like bowling pins. Yeah, if it's Samoa Joe. Yeah, if it's Luke Harper. And even then, if you got somebody like Bobby Lashley or and you know, a big guy like Jinder Mahal, but you say, oh, maybe if it caught him, you know, wrong. You got five guys. And Finn Balor. It'd be like throwing a dart at Godzilla. And I'm tired of seeing that because it's so fake, Mike.
Right. Like you said, if it's any of those bigger guys, yeah, you're going to do that. I mean, you could have gotten away with it if none of the other two big guys were there. You could buy, you know, him jumping over the top rope and hitting Lio Rush and the two Singh brothers because they're about his size. And
yes.
And, yeah, you know, you could buy that, but you can't buy them even – look, you can't even buy him if it's just doing that just to Lashley because Lashley's going to catch him and slam him against the railing, you know.
Right. The only way that's going to work is if Lashley isn't facing him, where you say, well, he didn't see him coming and he hit him from behind. Maybe the impact knocks him down. Or Lashley's just getting up, never saw it, and he gets hit right in the friggin', you know, head with his whole body. But when he's standing there, they're all standing there, and he jumps over the ropes, and they all sort of catch him, and then they fall down. You're like, well, how much weight are you trying to catch? You're not trying to catch any amount of weight. You're trying to catch 180 pounds, tops. And there's five of you. If the five of you can't support 180 pounds, then, you know, I don't know what to tell you. That's what I can tell you. It's awful. That's got to stop. Logic has got to start playing into wrestling a little bit. Not a lot. I'm not asking for a lot of logic. Just a little. Please don't give us a main event that was made at the last minute as if you had no event, no main event scheduled for Raw. None. Please don't give us a 180-pound man knocking down 14 340-pound guys like bowling pins. Because it doesn't make sense. Please don't give us champions that lose every single week to everyone else on the roster, but yet they're still the champion. Because then you're just undermining your own championship belts. What is the point of having a belt if it doesn't represent that you're the best? What is the point of having a belt if everyone else pins you on a regular basis? There's no point. If I were in the WWE right now and you wanted to hand me an Intercontinental or a U.S. belt or a tag team belt, I'd be like, I don't know, man. I seem to win more if I don't have any belt. If I have the belt, all of a sudden I'm dropping matches to everybody because you're trying to get people over as, well, they're as good as the champion. Yeah, but what does that do? It makes you look like the champions are garbage. You can't get people over by constantly beating champions. You can do it once in a while. You can have an upset once in a while where you say, holy crap, man, that guy beat the champion. Like, for instance, when Kofi Kingston beat Daniel Bryan. Or Mustafa Ali. But you can't have it all the time. You can't have Kevin Owens beat Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston beat Daniel Bryan, Mustafa Ali beat Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles beat Daniel Bryan. Everybody beats Daniel Bryan, but Daniel Bryan's still the champion. Well, what does being the champion mean then? You've lost to everyone. So the belt is worthless. And you know that the WWE knows it because Brock Lesnar doesn't lose to anyone and Ronda Rousey doesn't lose to anyone. So you know, Mike, that they know what they're doing.
Right. And to your point, every time now, not maybe not right now when she's holding the tag team championships, but Right. Every time, we've said this before, every time Sasha Banks wins a singles championship, you don't buy it because you know she's going to lose it right away.
Yeah, she always loses it one shot, and now that they're the tag team champions, they're dropping matches to the Iconics, who, by the way, are beating up two-on-one usually. They gang up on one girl, and the girl kicks their ass. So, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Now, tonight, we have AJ Styles against Kurt Angle, and we're probably going to have this very big angle involving the New Day. And this is going to be important, folks, because how they handle this is going to be the difference between if this match really does make a big difference at WrestleMania or this is bullshit. Because right now you're getting to the Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins thing being bullshit. No fan wanted to be told, I'm your savior. I will sacrifice myself for my brethren and my minions. Please, Seth, get over yourself. Then you can't just have like the New Day saying, well, we're going to quit. You got to have something big tonight. Something really big has to happen. I tend to doubt it, if you want my honest opinion, but I hope I'm proven wrong. Either way, folks, we'll see tonight, and we'll be back here on Friday with more Wrestle Chat Radio.
You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.